And now, meet the press. Our guest today is the Attorney General of the United States, Robert Kennedy. Our panel consists of James Reston, New York Times, Richard Wilson, Cowles Publications, Herbert Kaplow, NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. Here is our moderator, Ned Brooks.
Our guest today is the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Robert F. Kennedy. He is the country's top law enforcement officer and one of President Kennedy's chief troubleshooters. He recently was appointed by the President as a member of a four-man group to develop a program for waging psychological warfare. And now here is the first question from Lawrence E. Spivak, our permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Kennedy, Senator Margaret Chase Smith said in the Senate the other day that the Kennedy administration apparently lacked the will to use nuclear weapons. Now, you know your brother probably better than almost anybody else. Do you think he has the will to use nuclear weapons if necessary?
Well, I would say first probably a matter that takes more of his time and more of his thoughts than anything else, because when we're talking about using nuclear weapons, we're talking about almost the destruction of the human race, at least a very large proportion of it. But on this question of Berlin, and on a question of principle, a question of when in a particular set of circumstances, if we retreat, that we'll never be able to stand up again, that in that particular area, as we are in Berlin at the present time, there's no question that he's prepared to use nuclear weapons. If it comes to that, he will use nuclear weapons.
Now, he evidently hasn't convinced Senator Smith. Is there any evidence today that he has convinced Mr. Khrushchev?
Well, of course, I think that's the great gamble that Mr. Khrushchev is taking. He's going to push it. He's going to continue to push it to the wall. A dictator has a position that the leader of a free society does not have, and he can continue to push. If he miscalculates, and that's the great danger in all of these matters when dealing with a dictator, if he miscalculates, the world could be destroyed. I would hope that within the last few weeks he's come to the realization that the president and the free world are willing to use nuclear weapons to preserve our position in Berlin, to ensure that the people of Berlin remain free and that we have access to that city. I think, as the president said continuously, that again, if we do not stand up on Berlin, when can we ever be expected to stand up? And he's going to stand up.
Mr. Kennedy, the United States has been building up its conventional forces in Europe, and this has confused a great many people. Isn't there danger, as some military men believe, that this serves to confirm in Mr. Khrushchev's mind that the United States would not use nuclear weapons?
Well, I think we've built up our nuclear weapon force also. As the Secretary of Defense, Mr. McNamara, has said, we spent more than $2 billion extra on nuclear weapons. What we're talking about, Mr. Spivak, really is this tremendous destruction and quick destruction. If we use nuclear weapons. The president doesn't want the decision to be one of surrender or the use of nuclear weapons. He wants to be able to have even a possibility of a third alternative, to at least explore a possibility. And maybe it's going to come to that. But at least if we have conventional forces, as well as our nuclear forces, maybe at the in the last moment, in the last analysis, we're going to be able to preserve peace. I think we're going to have to take every calculation, make every effort to try to keep it out of nuclear warfare. If it comes to that, he's prepared to do it, but we would hope that it wouldn't come to that.
Well, can conventional forces be of any use, considering what the Russians have there, if
there's
a warship
no question
broke
they
out?
Can be. There's no question that they can be.
You say they can be?
Yes.
We'll continue the questions with Mr. Reston.
Mr. Attorney General, I want to get into your own field of the Department of Justice, but I'd like to clear up one point that Mr. Spivak raised. You said that we and the Allies would be prepared to use nuclear weapons. Now, Is there an understanding of the point at which we would do this with the Allies?
I think there's been a great deal of conversation and discussion, Mr. Reston, in connection with that. And
Is there agreement on this point?
You mean at the exact moment? I think that there are certain agreements as to when nuclear weapons might be used. There are other discussions regarding other contingencies or other possibilities.
Now, in this other field, during the last session of Congress, you introduced what was widely regarded as a very tough wiretapping bill. What was the theory in your mind at that time, and why do you think this was rejected by the Congress?
Well, it hasn't been rejected by the Congress.
It never got out of committee, did it?
No, but it hasn't been rejected yet. It hasn't been voted on. We feel that in the field of espionage, in the field of some areas of organized crime, that there is a growing problem. We're having a more and more difficult time fighting it. We have suggested and recommended that with the approval of a court, approval of a judge, that in cases of espionage, which is much more active now, Mr. Reston, than it's ever been in the history of the United States, the communist espionage here in this country, run and operated by representatives of bloc countries, is much more active now than it has ever been. Much more active now, for instance, than it was 5 or 10 years ago. We need the weapons in order to deal with that, to be able to present this evidence in court. So we have asked that with the permission of the court, that we should have the right to put wiretaps on. Also in the field of kidnapping, where kidnapping takes place. So it's not a very wide or broad bill that we have suggested or recommended. It's restricted in these areas where we think it's particularly needed.
Would you spell out what you've just said about, would you give us some evidence of how much more active this espionage is at the present time?
I couldn't do that.
All right.
Mr. Keplow.
Mr. Kennedy, some months ago, the President asked you and a couple of other people to look into the Central Intelligence Agency. What have you found out?
Well, we made a report to the President of the United States.
Are we going to hear anything more about that
report?
You'll
have to ask him.
Mm-hmm. We're also given the chore recently of serving with a few other people in government on a board. It's sort of hard to define actually what they're calling it. A group to look into psychological and political aspects of the international struggle. What have you done there so far?
Well, I think it's been given more attention than it perhaps deserved. We were a preliminary group. I think everybody in government and anybody who's been in Washington or paid any attention to this subject at all realizes that we haven't used all the assets that we have in this area. That we have the USIA, that we have certain labor groups that cooperate, make efforts, but that we have a lot of individuals here in the United States who would be willing to help and assist in other countries, who have contacts and connections in other countries, to help and assist getting across the message of the United States by pointing out in various foreign countries, neutral countries, and countries that are allied with the United States, what this country's position, what we are trying to accomplish, and what the Soviet Union's attempting to accomplish, that it shouldn't be handled just through the United States government, that we have other areas that where we can get some assistance.
Have you actually started to set this up?
What we have done is first to see what the problem is, and then we have made a recommendation to the President in the last week as to certain steps that might be taken in order to deal with this.
Well, you expect that we'll hear about that pretty soon.
Well, I would expect, once again, you'd have to ask the President.
Mr. Attorney General, was there no such organization in existence until this was set up? Have we not been doing these things?
We have been doing it on an uncoordinated basis, and in addition, using just a small proportion of our assets in this field. There's a great deal more that can be done than has been done. I think the fact that there was such little attention around the world, for instance, when the Soviet Union put up their wall in Berlin. If the United States had ever taken any action such as that, you would have heard about it everywhere. There would have been bombs thrown. There would have been flags hauled down in front of our USIA headquarters. Windows would have been broken. The Soviet Union started their testing. There was really very little attention given to it. There was some around the world, but very little. If we had done the same thing, there would have been a great attention. We made our study to find out why that was so and what we could do to improve the situation.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Attorney General, I believe you have studied the Cuban problem, at least what happened during the invasion. In retrospect, do you think it was a wise course to have denied the Cuban nationals air cover for their invasion of Cuba?
Well, again, we made a study of that. You're making a statement of fact, which I'm not sure that I could agree with. We made a study of that situation, and a report on that went to the president. He has already stated that he takes full responsibility for the failure of that operation and feels that it's within the national interest not to try to find any other scapegoats. The responsibility is where it should be, which is in the President of the United States.
I wouldn't suggest that this was a case of finding scapegoats. I would suggest that it's a case where the public may feel it's entitled to know what happened in connection with the Cuban invasion.
Well, we made a report to the president. I would agree very strongly with the decision that it would not be within the national interest to make that study or report public. I don't think that it would be helpful at all at this time.
Is this because it puts the United States in a bad light?
Well, I think I just let it rest at that. The president has taken responsibility for it and will continue to take responsibility. If there were errors that were made, it's his responsibility. To get beyond that and get into specific actions that were taken, why they were taken, and who took them, would not be helpful to the United States at the present time.
You deny that air cover was canceled?
As I say, I'm not going to go into the matter.
But, Mr. Attorney General, do you attend meetings of the National Security Council?
I do.
As a regular thing?
I do.
Were you present when the decisions were made with respect to Cuba?
I was not.
No. What is your role, general role in the government, outside of being an Attorney General?
I'm Attorney General. And occasionally the President has asked me to take on some other tasks.
But you don't go into a broad field of presidential advice. You're not the, are you the second man in the government or
no.
Not? I don't mean to suggest that in any invidious way, but you do have your brother's confidence, unquestionably, and I wondered to what extent this gets you into many other fields.
Well, occasionally, as we mentioned one or two here, the president has asked me to perform particular functions. They are limited, and I know that he asks many others within government to undertake a particular task in this very difficult time. I happen to be one of them, but there are Arthur Goldberg, he asks, Douglas Dillon, he asks, and he also asked the Attorney General.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Kennedy, during the presidential campaign, I believe the president pledged himself to work for civil rights legislation early in the session. What decided him not to?
Well, there was a study that he set up a committee made up of Congressman Seller and Senator Clark to study this whole field, and they have submitted some legislation based on their study. We have taken, Mr. Reston, a great deal of action in many fields in the area of civil rights, which, in my estimation, accomplished much more than could ever have been accomplished by any possible legislation, or any legislation that might have been possible to get passed in Congress.
Am I to understand by that that even in the next session you're not going to have any comprehensive civil rights bills?
I think that we'll make a study of it at the end of this year and determine whether legislation would be helpful or necessary.
It's been estimated that about 6,000 Negro children have been integrated in the public schools this year, making a total of about 220,000 out of some 3 million in the southern and border states. Would you say that at the present rate of school desegregation, we're meeting the Supreme Court's injunction of with all deliberate speed?
Now, of course, this is in the hands of the local courts at the present time, the district courts, not in the hands of the executive branch of the government. Where we have responsibility and where we can take action, great action has been taken. For instance, in the field of voting and registration, a great deal more has been done over the period of the last 8 months than has ever been done in the history of the United States. For instance, at the time, as of January 20th, there were some nine actions that were taken in court in connection with registration and voting cases. Since the January 20th, we've taken over a dozen. There were some six investigations that were going on at that time. Since we've taken over, there are more than 50 investigations. A great deal more has been done in this field. We've done a great deal as far as employment is concerned. A great deal has been done where no action had been taken try to desegregate the airports. Orders that were issued by the ICC at the request of the executive branch of the government, just issued last week, are the most far-reaching orders that in this field that have ever been issued by an executive order in the field of civil rights. But there should also be recognition of what they have been able to do under very difficult circumstances. Maybe it's not as quick and as fast as some of us would like, but there has been a great deal of progress that has been made over a period of the last year or so. I think that they will continue to make progress, but this situation is not just going to go away. It's not going to disappear. I think that they will continue to be affirmative gains. Maybe, as I say, it's not as quick as we might hope, but I think we'll continue to make them.
Mr. Reston.
Mr. Attorney General, in two fields you seem to have introduced in the last 8 months a new principle or a new emphasis. First, in the field of executive privilege, where you seem more willing than previous presidents and administrations to give information sought by the Congress. And secondly, in the antitrust field, you seem more willing to go to criminal prosecution. Would you give us your philosophy on these two fields?
Well, first, as far as executive privilege is concerned, I was associated with a congressional committee for 5 or 6 years had battles with the executive branch of the government regarding obtaining information. I think it's terribly important to ensure that the executive branch of the government is not corrupt and that they are efficient, that the legislative branch of the government has this ability to check on what we're doing in the executive branch of the government. So in every instance that has been brought to our attention in the Department of Justice so far by various departments of the executive branch where this question has been raised, we have suggested and recommended that they make the information available to Congress. We will continue to do that. I don't say that there might not be an instance where executive privilege might have to be used, but I think that it's terribly important. With the executive branch of the government as powerful and strong as it is, that there be some check and balance on it. And in the last analysis, the group that can best check and ensure that it's handling its affairs properly is the Congress of the United States. So we will lean over backwards to make sure that they get the information that they request. As far as the criminal cases, this has been chiefly in the field of antitrust, has been chiefly in the field of price fixing. We have found, going through past cases, that there have been antitrust violations by companies continuously. that there is a fine paid and the practice continues. For instance, in General Electric, there must have been dozens of violations of the antitrust laws by General Electric over a period of years. It didn't have any effect on them. When an individual conspires with another group, or a group get together and conspire to fix prices, to put a other competitors out of business, or defraud the consumer, or defraud the United States government, as many of these people do, I think that they should be held responsible themselves. That it's not sufficient that the company come in and pay a fine. I think that the individual who is responsible for the act should pay for it. This is a criminal offense, and I think that the penalty, as provided by law, should be levied.
Mr. Keplow.
Mr. Kennedy, school desegregation may be moving next time around into some pretty tough areas of the South in the sense of pronounced segregationist sentiment. Is your department doing something now to prepare for this?
Well, we went into all of these areas had problems this September. We met with the school board. We met with the chiefs of police.
This was before
yes,
the term?
Yes, over the period of the last 4 months. Mm-hmm. In all of these areas where there was anticipated that there might be some difficulty or trouble, we have spent this time conferring with them, giving them the benefit of any ideas or advice that we might have, and getting whatever suggestions they might have. We will continue with that practice. We have found, I might say quite frankly, great cooperation from many of these officials in the southern states. They are facing a major problem which has to be recognized. But we have found in these registration cases, in these voting cases, great cooperation. We have gone in and without any publicity to attempt to try to work these things out smoothly. In many instances, in many, many instances, that's been successful. I think they appreciate the fact that you're just not putting out a press release and trying to get publicity about what is being attempted, being done in a particular community.
Well, I'm referring here primarily to school desegregation. You were talking about, you conferred with
also
state
in,
officials about
also in the field of school. That's what I've been talking
about. And you're going to continue to do
that's
that
correct.
Now, say, through next September.
We're having conferences at the present time in connection with that.
With which people? With which
well, I'd
states,
rather not get into that.
Would you be... what do you tell these people, the school, people involved with school desegregation? I know you've often talked about, you get together and you talk about this informally and you try and establish a rapport. What do you say to them?
Well, we go into how it's been handled badly and how it's been handled successfully in other communities. Now, what the difference was, how it was accomplished successfully in a particular community without any stir. What you need, what steps should be taken in order to prepare a community. We've had some experience in that field, and that's what we give them that advice and ideas, and some of them they accept.
Gentlemen, we have about 2 minutes remaining. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Attorney General, I believe you have stated that your monopoly policy on enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act and other acts of that kind are not illustrative of any anti-business attitude on the part of this administration. Yet, how do you make jibe the fact that pressure is continually on the steel companies and other companies not to raise prices, and yet the government does not enter the General Motors wage settlement at all? And this settlement is described by some people as the most inflationary wage settlement in many years. How do you make those two positions come together so that you don't seem to be taking your entire action against business, but you also include labor in this?
Yeah, well,
formula?
I think that the President has explained that this applies to both labor and business. I think that he, together with many others, including former ex-Senator Taft, have made the point that a great deal turns on steel prices in the United States. If steel raises its prices, you might very well have inflation here in this country. This is terribly important. This is the most important area. So he's asked them, he said on January 20th, people are going to have to do something for their country. He has gone to the steel companies and said, this is a chance to make a contribution for your country. He hopes they will. He said that also that labor organizations are going to have to make some contribution. We've been able to get this country out of its recession period, back on its feet, without any inflation at the present time. And if the steel prices go up, that might very well be badly hurt.
Well, hasn't the pressure been greater on the companies, though, than it has on labor? You don't really intervene. In the case of the steel companies, you actually intervened.
Well, the President of the United States has requested the steel companies. That doesn't seem terribly drastic to me.
Well, you had Mr. Blau at the White House.
I'm sorry. I wish we could go on, but I see that our time is up.
Thank you, Ned Brooks.